Welcome to the Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 podcast, bringing you ideas and resources for K-12 classrooms, schools, and school districts. Hosted by Steve Mileto. And now, here's Steve with this week's show.
Hey everyone, this is Steve Mileto. Here I am with Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, and we're back again with another great conversation happening. And today I have Kelly Harris Wright from the Georgia Department of Education with us. Say hi, Kelly.
Well, hello. Hello, fellow Georgia educators.
Kelly, if we could start this conversation, because we're going to talk about formative instructional practices in just a few minutes, but if you would start the conversation by just telling us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Well, I'm a veteran educator. My entire career has been in the state of Georgia, I'm happy to say. I have served in special education as well as the general education setting as a classroom teacher. I have worked as an assistant principal, assessment and accountability. I've worked at the district level, Title I. I've served as director for elementary schools in a large urban school district, and my last job prior to retirement in 2012 was as director for K-12 teaching and learning. It was my good fortune to be able to have an opportunity to transition to the DOE in January of 2013, expressly for the purpose of starting a pilot and preparing for the statewide launch of Georgia FIP, which is actually the primary purpose of our conversation today. So I'm happy to be here, and I'm happy to share with educators who will be listening to this podcast.
Well, excellent. Thank you. With that introduction, let's talk a little bit about what formative instructional practices, what this program is, and if we could talk a little bit about what the vision is for it.
Well, certainly, Steve, not a problem. Let's start with the vision first, and then we'll talk about what it is. This particular project falls at the DOE within the Division for Assessment and Accountability. And as you are aware, Race to the Top dollars afforded the department the opportunity to create lots of resources to support principals, teachers, district leaders in working toward implementing standards-based instruction, our CCGPS, with greater fidelity. So in the assessment division, we were able to use some of these funds for three major projects. One of those projects is, of course, Georgia's FIP, which is an assessment literacy online professional learning opportunity. The other two projects are the development of a formative item bank of high-quality assessment items, primarily in English language arts and mathematics for grades 3 through 12, that will allow teachers to give practice and experience to students in using rigorous items that will be similar to what our assessment items will look like in 2015. And then our third opportunity that we used our Race to the Top dollars for in the assessment division is currently being piloted. It will be a set of interim benchmark assessments that districts can use, primarily at level 3, so that they can do large-scale assessment, again, with rigorous items in preparation for the upcoming state assessments. We are out of park now. Upcoming rigorous assessments in 2015. Now, that's the context. So let me now talk a little more specifically about Georgia's FIP, the Assessment Literacy Professional Learning Opportunity. Georgia's FIP is based on the work of Rick Stiggins and Jan Chapuy, as well as many others who've been in the forefront of discussing and talking about the value of formative instructional practices in terms of moving instruction forward in the classroom. When we use that term, formative instructional practices, our acronym, of course, is FIP, we're talking about the formal and informal ways that teachers and students collect information about student learning. When we talk about these kinds of practices, we are talking about involvement of the student at all levels in their learning, and that the teacher's primary responsibility is to facilitate learning and understanding on the part of the student in a very collaborative kind of way. So it's about the use of the information that is collected. All information about student learning can be used formatively, and sometimes those uses can be summative. But when we're talking about the practices that we are purporting in online professional learning, we're talking about formally processes to modify learning, modify teaching, to make decisions so that more learning opportunities, if you will, can be afforded to students.
With that, it, you know, the focus is on the formative practices. So how about, for say, let's talk a little bit about formative assessment and what some examples of formative assessment are. You know, what does it look like? You want to talk a little bit about that?
Happy to do so. When we're talking about formative assessment, in the manner that we are suggesting, recommending, purporting through our Georgia FIP online learning, we're actually talking about some very strategic and intentional processes that we believe leaders, teachers, and students can learn and use. So the notion of intentionality is a key factor when we're talking about formative processes, because there's a lot of planning and forethought into what we are doing with and for our students. And the process really begins with being very clear about what we are supposed to be teaching and our understanding as educators of what that is. And then the second component is our ability to ensure that our students understand what we are trying to teach. And so this notion of clear learning targets is the first rung on that formative ladder, so to speak. Once we're clear about targets, and we get to that notion by appropriately knowing how to deconstruct standards, then we can talk about organizing learning into progressions that make sense for students. And that's a step that's very, very important work, and it's important work to be done, in my opinion, at the school level, because the learning progressions that are needed by students can be different depending upon the needs of students. And then once we have that foundation, then we can start talking about planning our assessments based on the type of learning target, and then the collection of information about how well students have learned leads us to be able to make more accurate decisions about what should come next. When we're looking at how to create assessments like this, we typically are talking about some form of rubrics or some form of understanding that can be shared both by teachers and students. I mean, it can be as simple as, am I on target? Am I progressing toward the target? Have I hit the target? It doesn't necessarily always have to be a very complex type of rubric, but it does have to be based on the particular type of learning that's expected. Was it knowledge? Was it skill? Was it reasoning? Are you expecting a product? What is it that you're expecting to see students to do? And we know that based on how standards have been analyzed, deconstructed, the identification of any underlying kinds of skills that go with that, any kind of academic vocabulary that needs to be taught, all the things that we have to consider as good teachers, good educators, about our students. Not only do we have to look at it from a learning target perspective and a learning progression, but we also have to look at it from three other perspectives. Foundation learning, what maybe should have taken place prior to this standard? Do we have gaps that need to be considered? Mastery learning, and then going beyond the standard, because there may be opportunities that we see for students who have already mastered the standard. So in talking about trying to prepare a lesson and organize learning activities for students, we have to think about all of those students. And so looking at it from those three perspectives, foundation, mastery, and beyond the target, gives us the ability to start off in a direction where we are at least attempting to meet the needs of all students and prepare to differentiate, if you will, our instruction. And then, of course, that it's a cycle. Once we know how well students are progressing toward those targets, we can make adjustments, we can modify. We help students learn to give feedback to other peers, to reflect. And so it becomes a very collaborative process when we learn as educators how to use these very strategic ways of thinking about teaching and learning from formative ways.
Excellent. One of the things that I wanted to kind of take you back to is you're talking about one of the first steps in getting to using formative assessment is doing this step of identifying the learning targets, which is really deconstructing standards. And what I'd like you to do is, if we could just for a second kind of come back to that. And, you know, as a classroom teacher, what you're saying is that I need to be able to look at the unit that I have coming up and the standards that are associated with it. And then can you kind of help me from there?
I have a little more on that one.
Right.
Sure. That means look at the standards for the unit. Figure out, because there are usually several standards that are expected in an entire unit of instruction for a 6 or 9 week period. And so typically you want the teacher or the grade level or the department to look at what the expectations are together, so that there is some agreement regarding what those learning targets are, that the standards, that we all agree that this represents knowledge, skill, and that this is a way to proceed. The other reason for looking at the learning targets as a group, it allows teachers collaboratively to discuss the needs of students. It is typical that a grade level or a department would have students at varying levels of mastery, varying levels of abilities based on those standards. And so in working together, if teachers do this work, that allows teachers perhaps to do some differentiation across the grade level or across the department to meet the needs of all of the students in ways that may make teaching a much more efficient process. So that's one positive note that can be considered. But the other piece that goes along with that conversation among teachers about the intended learning or the learning targets is that there are a set of questions that teachers can engage in during that conversation. For example, are there knowledge, skill, or reasoning targets within this deconstructed standard that students need to know? This notion of what would be any academic or domain-specific language that students need to know in order to master the standards, and can the teachers working in a group agree that these are the terms that need to be defined? In terms of that notion that I spoke of earlier about foundation learning, mastery learning, and learning beyond the standards, teachers can engage in those questions. Are there misconceptions that we need to address? Are there pre-teaching activities that we need to address before we can even get to talking about the learning targets? What do students already need to know to do this? What do I need to do for kids who've already mastered the target?
Yeah, that's excellent.
All of those kinds of conversations are really, really important when we're talking about deconstructing standards, organizing a unit of instruction, and preparing a sequence and a way to get through the intended learning, so that at the end we have a couple of things happening. We have evidence for the various levels of learning and targets that the students have been able to meet. we have a roadmap for determining some of our summative processes, because our formative processes should ultimately lead us to our summative processes. And then we have a way of communicating better with parents because we've been able to show them that roadmap and how students were progressing based on their participation, based on their work, based on their self-judgment about where they were in progressing and meeting those standards.
Gotcha. One of the things that I wanted to do kind of at this juncture is kind of talk about some of the, because many of these activities, when you look at the work, when you read the research behind it and the focus on this topic, one of the things that teachers have to be introduced in working with formative assessment practices is that many of these activities are not graded.
Absolutely. Many of them are not graded. And that's one of the notions and reasons why use of rubric-based kinds of assessments tend to be very, very helpful, because it gives not only the teacher but the student a roadmap using rubrics and exemplars of what the work looks like at various stages, gives not only teachers an idea of students' understanding, but it gives students a target, a way to proceed. It gives them hard copy evidence against which they can compare their own level of performance. It also gives them a target for tweaking and resubmitting and revising and looking over and asking for help and talking with peers about the next steps to get to the next level of performance. So when we are talking about use of formative assessment to modify teaching, to make adjustments in learning, that is not a summative process. It does not assume that we are at the end. It makes an assumption that the work is in progress, and as the work is in progress, we have ways of representing what that looks like in terms of a formative assessment. When a teacher believes that that rubric-based score, that formative process, represents the student's best effort in terms of understanding a skill or relative to the learning goal, at that point, it can be considered summative. I hope that's helpful. I hope that's answered your question.
Yes, it has.
That in the question.
No, it's very helpful. Thank you. Thank you very much. One of the things that we've been emphasizing, working as a RESA director in helping to introduce schools and school systems to the formative assessment practices, formative assessment uses, and the FIP modules. And one of the things that we get into is that discussion about why these activities are not graded and why they shouldn't be. And that it's really trying to get the teacher feedback so they can personalize that instruction. And that's why I wanted to kind of get into some of that discussion, and I appreciate it.
A great discussion, and it's a complicated discussion, because not only is it a place where educators are still learning and growing, it is a very complex issue to explain to parents. Parents are most typically comfortable with and have come to understand traditional grading. So when we move into this arena of rubrics and successive approximation toward a target, if you will, that's a new area for parents. And so not only are we as educators trying to learn more and study and work on the work, so to speak, we have to bring our parents along with us with this new understanding, because it will be new for them too, and is new for them.
That's a good point, very good point. One of the things that I would like to kind of direct our discussion towards at this point is let's talk a little bit about the modules themselves, the actual program, the part that the teachers can get on, the that's based upon the Stiggins, Chapuis, and Arter work. The online modules focus. There's a series of activities for the teachers. There's 5 modules, and then there's an additional one for a school-based leader as well as or system-based leader as well as a instructional coach. And one of the things that I wanted to just talk about is if you could talk a little bit about that structure, about the modules and just the uses of them.
Absolutely. I'm happy to talk about that. That's probably going to be the most exciting part of this podcast.
I'm going to say
what the website is first before I forget. For any educator who's listening and maybe has not had an opportunity to go to the website, just click on www.gadoe.org/Georgia FIP. There's another way to do it that's even simpler than that. We've had so many hits now, we pop up instantly in a Google search. So if you simply put in Georgia FIP, F-I-P, into your search engine, the website will come and you can click on it and bookmark it at that point. So I just wanted to do a little shout-out about that resource.
Excellent. Thanks
on the website, there is also a 9-minute overview video that may be of interest to educators if they don't have time to study and read. In 9 minutes, they can have a full overview and orientation through the video about what Georgia FIP is. But you're right, Steve. It is organized into role-based modules. In this vendor product that we were fortunate enough to find and fortunate enough to be able to tweak through a pilot with 9 school districts upon my arrival to the DOE in January of 2013, they are called learning paths. We call them role-based learning paths, and there are modules for teachers, modules for coaches, teacher leaders, and then modules for district leaders and principals. The foundation modules are modules 1 through 5, and that is also called a FIP learning path for teachers because it provides the basic information to be able to plan, to try to use some of the strategies that we know result in greater learning and growth for students in classrooms. Module 1 provides an overview of the research about formative instructional practices, and as you mentioned, it's based on the work primarily of Rick Stiggins, Jan Chapuis, and others. Module 2, the topic is clear learning targets, and in that module, educators have an opportunity to understand in a more in-depth level this notion of deconstructing standards, this notion of organizing them into a learning progression, and adapting them for student-friendly language, which is very appropriate at the elementary level, may not necessarily be needed at the middle and high school levels as much. That would be something to consider for many of our special students who have special needs, perhaps the need to convert standards into student-friendly language. But the point is that content is available in that module should you need it. Module 3 helps us understand how to organize efficient methods and ways to collect evidence of learning based on learning target type. We get to module 4, analyzing the evidence of learning that we have learned processes and strategies for in 3, in terms of how to collect that information. You learn how to analyze it and then give students effective feedback. That information is provided in online learning module 4. What I particularly like about that particular module, Module 4 addresses feedback for success, challenge students, feedback when there are complete misconceptions in terms of student understanding, and feedback when students have demonstrated an approximate understanding of learning but not enough, how to give corrective feedback. So there's a lot of information on the importance of feedback to move the learning forward. And then Module 5 is called Student Ownership of Learning, Peer Feedback and Reflection. And that has to do with helping teachers learn processes to create a facilitative environment where students can actually learn to take responsibility for their learning and actually learn how to talk to one another which I think is a great thing. And
yes.
appropriate ways in the classroom that has more value other than just learning. Learning how to communicate appropriately and in social ways with peers as well as teachers is a big deal. So a little bit of that information is provided to help us in Module 5. So 1 through 5 represent a foundation for teachers. Then we get into Module 6. Module 6 is specifically designed for leadership personnel on building a vision, sustaining change, being a cheerleader and a lead learner, what it takes to do that. And then Module 7 is for coaches and teacher leaders. In that particular module, how to deploy resources, how to give feedback appropriately to adults, which is a good thing, and then how to create an environment where teachers are comfortable in taking risks and learning how to implement fit strategies. Those are the three major paths. However, we recommend that any leader, any principal who's interested in looking at FIP at a very serious level for its potential transformational power in your school or district, that you also take the same learning that teachers are recommended to take, which would be modules 1 through 5 plus the leadership module. If one is in a coaching role or a teacher leader role, we recommend the same. Take module 1 through 5 and 7, which is the module for coaching and teacher leaders.
Thank you. You know, one of the things that's very powerful in those modules is they actually have film clips of teachers using formative instructional practices and talking about it. And you actually see some of the shots of them in class working with their kids. And that interaction is very powerful.
Very powerful. I'd also like to recommend something else that I've recently run across that educators may be interested in if they don't already know about it. It's over in the CCGPS section of our DOE website, particularly under the math section. And there are some new videos posted on formative assessment and mathematics classrooms. And those videos are very short. If I'm not mistaken, they feature primarily high school students. But they were designed as a part of the mathematics design collaborative. And they are extremely well done. And they provide excellent examples of what formative assessment looks like in Georgia classroom. So I encourage our viewers to go quick and surf a little bit and find that. It's a valuable resource that actually shows FIP in action, if you will.
So those are, they're under the CCG, the Common Core?
They are in the CCGPS section of the DOE website in the mathematics section.
Gotcha. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And they're wonderful things. And what's so nice about them is that they're very short. I don't think there is a vignette beyond 5 minutes. So it's a quick look, but a concrete model that we as educators can look at to see what it looks like when it's appropriately done and done well.
Excellent. One of the things as we're starting to get close to wrapping up here, I wanted to just ask you, is there anything that I haven't asked you that you'd like to talk about at this point?
That's a great question. Whenever I have an opportunity to talk, and I'm still excited as a very, very veteran educator, I'd like to make sure that our listeners are aware of some wonderful resources if they want to begin the learning journey with formative instructional practices. Of course, two of the resources that I'll name are already online, and you'll see them. If you have an opportunity to participate in Georgia FIP. And Steve, please don't let me get off without telling them how to get access. I've forgotten to say that, and I don't want to do that. But I want to name my resources first. I want to recommend a book called Seven Strategies of Assessment for Learning. It's by Pearson. It's by Jan Chapuis and her husband. I want to recommend Assessment, Balance, and Quality. That is an action guide for school leaders. Again, this resource is published by Pearson Education, and it's written by Jan and Steve Chapuis, Carol Commodore, and Rick Diggins. The best part about this particular book, it is a wonderful book for leadership personnel who want to begin to tackle this topic and what it looks like at the district level and what it looks like as a school-wide reform. And this particular resource has a CD in the back where you can download and use some of the wonderful templates that have already been developed to facilitate your journey into trying to implement it in your school. And then, of course, a tried-and-true resource that was produced around 2010, published around 2010, Formative Assessment and Standards-Based Grading by Bob Mazzarno, or Robert Mazzarno, Classroom Strategies That Work. These are three wonderful resources just to kind of delve into this topic a little further, if you'd like to consider that. And now I'd like to talk a little bit about how to get access to Georgia FIP. If you are a teacher, you should ask your principal or your school-specific FIP learner access code. If you are a principal, you should ask your district's assessment director or your school-specific administrative access code to Georgia FIP. And then, if for some reason you are unable to locate those codes, feel free to contact me through the website, Georgia FIP, and I'll be happy to help you with that. There are also access codes for online learning for anyone who serves at the district office level, leadership personnel, support personnel. There is a separate access code for district office personnel, and it follows that same hierarchy, a district administrative access code for FIP, and then there is a district learner access code for FIP. So it's very important. And then once you get your access code in hand, there is a handout on the website called New User Directions, Georgia FIP. Print that file or open it and follow the step-by-step process with your access code in hand. And in about 2 minutes, you will have created your FIP online learning account. And of course, I'm available by phone. I'm available by email. If you're stuck in any way, feel free to contact me. I'm happy to help.
Excellent. Thank you. Yeah. And I'll put those, your email and your contact information on the liner note where we publish it. Kelly, I can't thank you enough for spending time with us today. And I know that my own interaction with this and working with teachers and school leaders is that they're very eager to learn more and work with the kids in learning this. And the FIP program is an excellent way of introducing them to these strategies and these processes. I can't thank you enough. I greatly appreciate you spending time with us today and just wish you the best.
Thank you. I'm so glad to participate and you have a great day.
Thanks. You do the same.
Hello, listeners. We want to remind everyone to check out all of our digital content at teachinglearningleadingk12.com. That's teachinglearningleadingk12.com. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. Just search Teaching Learning Leading K-12 in the iTunes store. Check back often for updates and new material.
You have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, recorded in Eastman, Georgia, at the Heart of Georgia Precinct.